Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's 9/11. Anniversary of the attack on the Twin Towers of financial institutions of the United States.
I don't think anybody would ever forget. This is obviously a little cliche, but I don't think anybody's going to forget ever where they were when that happened. I could see it was like just, I remember exactly what was going on.
Watching TV.
Yeah, watching TV. My wife was calling hysterical, pulled the kids out of school. It was just a crazy, crazy time. Markets going nuts till they closed them down.
Well, they weren't bombing Florida.
No, but the stock markets. I don't mean the supermarkets.
No, I mean pulling the kids out of school.
Yeah, but everybody did. I mean, there was this general state of emergency around the country, wasn't there? I mean, just everybody was hysterical.
Yeah, everybody was hysterical.
We're under attack. Anyway, Happy New Year. Happy Rosh Hashanah.
Yes, it's New Year for you.
Yeah, marking the start of the Jewish New Year. And no show next week, my friend. It's Erev Yom Kippur, which means
that means no show.
That means no show the night before. So at sundown, holidays for the Jewish religion start, and then they go through the next day from sundown to sundown. We have to do everything differently, you know? It just can't be simple. It can't be just, all right, starts today and then ends at midnight and starts at midnight. And no, it's got to be at sundown. So we have that coming up next week where we fast for the day.
Yes.
No eating, no drinking, no nothing.
No nothing.
Yep. So, one really interesting thing about that. So do you know that it is a quote unquote sin to eat during Yom Kippur, right? For Jewish people. But yeah. It's more of a sin that if you have to eat or maybe take medication or something like that to withhold that. In other words, if you have a requirement to, let's say, I don't know, maybe you have diabetes or maybe you have a heart condition and you have to take, you know, you're supposed to be taking pills, even though you're the most religious, you have to do, you need to be doing those things that are important for your health.
Probably.
Yeah, that's a good idea for all of us, but yeah. So that's what's going on. We had a nice Rosh Hashanah. We have, one of the popular fruits for the Jewish holiday is the pomegranate. Sometimes called the Chinese apple.
And why is that?
It has 613 seeds. Do you know that?
No.
It has 613 seeds. Now, I'm just
going to find this hard to believe.
Look it up. 613 seeds. But there are 613, quote, laws in the Jewish tradition.
Which came first, the pomegranate or the laws?
That's the question, isn't it?
Well, I'm going to guess pomegranate.
And who counted that and thought this up?
They were bored back in the day.
Yeah. So it's a symbol of fruitfulness and health and just all sorts of things. And it coincides with it. So it's like a holy fruit in a way.
Hmm.
So you stuff it inside of a chicken or you just eat it.
Without peeling it?
Some people use it like they cut it up and they'll put it in the chicken to, you know, sometimes you stuff fruit in a chicken and vegetables. Or a turkey to season it.
Yeah.
So they put a pomegranate in there.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Some things that you just didn't know.
I don't know a lot of this.
There's so much more. So much more. Let's go to the markets, though, and talk about what's going on there. Last week was a tough week for major indices. Everything was in the red. Everything was down last week, led by the NASDAQ, down about, I think, 2.5% last week. But the NASDAQ was the hardest hit. Primarily due to the big caps, the FANG stocks, they rolled over pretty hard. Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg and Twitter's Jack Dorsey testified to Congress about privacy and fake accounts and election issues. Did you watch any of that?
Nah, do we? No.
That seems to be a no agenda topic.
It's Adam took it
and didn't have much to say about it.
Well, yeah, we talked a little bit about it. It was not much going on.
Oh. Well, one thing I noticed that I thought was
just these guys. I mean, you know, Sandberg doesn't seem to even know how anything works.
Well, and Dorsey was like unmedicated.
Yeah.
But it was the first time, I think, that a man with a nose ring ever testified in front of Congress.
Well, since I didn't see it, I didn't see it visually. I didn't know he had a nose ring.
Yeah, one of those, just a very small little circle, gold circle.
The one between the nostrils?
No, on the right side, just kind of hanging in there.
Why?
I don't know. He's got a beard, so I guess that he's got that, and he's probably got a tattoo. So he's just got the whole thing.
Does he also have, you think, a parrot?
Oh, interesting. Could be. Maybe an iguana, too, huh? What's with those people that walk around with iguanas or snakes around their neck? Who walks around with a snake around their neck?
I have no idea. Just somebody asking for trouble.
Yeah. So one of the things that I noticed is that both of them said that they knew about this. They knew about the, you know, the potential for political, you know, swaying that's going on and fake accounts and, you know, election issues and all this kind of stuff that goes on. They were clear. They said, yeah, we know this is going on. We're working on it. We are doing something about it. They're trying to get solutions, but they can't do it on their own. They both said, we can't do this on our own. And I was like, whoa.
What does that mean?
Well, it seems that, in my opinion, that they're opening the door, inviting regulation by saying that.
Well, that's okay. They sure don't pay any attention to anybody when you report tweets.
Right. Well, no. Although they're shutting down accounts. Some of them.
I've never seen them shut down Rob Reiner's account, which I think is the most abusive on the whole system.
Really? I haven't even looked at his tweets.
All he does is call the president a jerk and an a-hole and a criminal and, you know, all kinds of things. It's unbelievable.
But do you think that the idea of regulation from a government standpoint, bringing in the government, the heavy hand of Congress and laws and regulations for social media, is a wise thing to open up?
It's a completely crazy idea. And I don't even know how they could do it. How are you going to regulate this thing? It's out of control.
I don't know. Seems like the bloom is off the rose of the whole social media thing. There was some study that I saw, which I don't know if it's true or not, that something like 40% of 18 to 24-year-olds shut down their Facebook account in the last 6 months. I find that hard to believe.
You know, I saw this thing. I didn't think it was believable either.
It just seems a little bit outlandish. That's a lot of people. And if it was true, you would think that it would be, you know, it wouldn't be just a blurb somewhere. It would be a much bigger to-do. But I do know that a lot of young people are off of or despise or really don't look at Facebook as much anymore. And it's more of an older population comparatively.
That's what they're trying to they're trying to make it seem that way.
Is that good?
But all the millennials I know, they're on Facebook on their phone all the time.
Is it Facebook or is it Instagram? Because I know between Instagram.
Both.
Oh, is it both?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's continue on some market issues here. U.S.-based money market funds attracted, now this is money market funds, cash funds, soaked in about $11.8 billion in the week ending last Wednesday, following outflows of about $6.3 billion in the previous week. So there was money in, money out. So this is a study by Lipper. And so it's, you know, they say, well, you know, that appetite for risk-taking is waning in the United States and Canada. Because they're looking to renegotiate the NAFTA and people are in it. But I mean,
Yeah.
So, and then they said U.S. equity based funds posted $7.2 billion of outflows in the week ending that Wednesday, following 2 weeks of inflows. So, taxable bonds posted over $1 billion of outflows in the week ending Wednesday. Now, equities have the largest component of these. But I don't know. I mean, I thought this was interesting that there was a gigantic outflow for the week. But at the same time, you know, you're talking about this is a noisy week by week situation, even though there was a net $5.5 billion out of wherever it came out of into money markets. In a way, the more there is money markets, the more there is the opportunity for people to put their money to work. So it's kind of a contraindicator in a way. However, there was another report, which brings up the concern that's mounting over fixed income outflows. And this is back to your thesis here. So investment grade corporate bonds suffered their worst outflows since December of 2016 in the week, leading up to Wednesday, with dedicated funds shedding about $3.1 billion, according to Bank of America Merrill Lynch survey. And high-yield and emerging market bond funds also saw big outflows. And again, that's a much there was only about 800, 800
yeah, it's not million, that much.
But that's a much smaller universe. Now that, you know, and this particular discussion was, is it 1998 all over again? So I think,
what do you think? Do you think it is?
I still think that there is a tremendous amount of opportunity for bonds to hold their values, in that U.S.-based bonds are still significantly higher yield than, let's say, their European or Japanese counterparts. And as such, if you're getting, let's say, I'm just picking a number, 1% on a 10-year bond that's from Europe, and you can get 2.75 or 2.95% here, you're going to probably do some arbitrage of that, and you put your money here. So there's a, until that shifts and there's a significant change in the dynamic where there's such a low interest rate everywhere else, and people say, well, the United States is a pretty strong place, and in fact, probably stronger than Europe overall from a credit worthiness standpoint.
I think it's a good guess.
Yeah. So why wouldn't you not, why would you not pour your money into higher yielding? If you have a choice of two different or three different investments, one has a very good rating, the one on the right has a very bad rating. The one with a very good rating has a higher yield than the one on the, what are you going to pick?
Duh.
Yeah. So that's what's going on there. That's why there's this whole notion of an imminent collapse of the bond market. Still, there has to be something that changes with the dynamic of all that.
Yes.
I don't know.
What could that be?
What could that be? You can see possibly a credit downgrade of the U.S. I'm just speculating.
I don't see how that's going to happen.
I don't see that either. Bonds of, well, we could see the continued derailment of emerging markets and non-U.S.-based bonds due to the fact that the dollar is moving higher and starting to crush things and people having to somehow liquidate. But then again, they'll probably go to a safety trade and into U.S. bonds. So that doesn't hold. What else?
Got to be something.
Recession. Okay, how about this? Much higher yields. Let me think about this. Much higher yields. Well, you still see that differential there. People will be losing money on their bonds. Yeah, it's got to be a recession. Somehow where interest rates got to a point where there's problems paying back the debt. I think a downgrade possibly, but that's it. Maybe when the tax receipts come in that they're not so good, and as the expectation is that tax cuts are going to create all this wealth, and therefore while we have lower taxes, we have a much greater pool of money to tax. And therefore we see the deficit blossom even further. The debt numbers on the U.S. are to GDP get out of hand, and therefore there's some spookiness going on. I don't know. I mean, it would have to be a recession. That's the only thing I can imagine. And again, I don't know why you wouldn't go towards the safety trade out of equities into fixed income under that scenario. So it's a very, it's a quandary. Perplexing.
Yes.
On the economic front, we did see the employment report last week. On Friday, a solid number, over 200,000 new additions to the payrolls and a 3.9% unemployment rate. And there was one big concern in that number, though, in that report. Very big.
Yeah.
And that was that wage growth is just ripping higher. And that's a sign, and that usually will result in inflation.
That would be, yes, but it's a good sign because it keeps people from belly aching about this particular thing.
Right. They're full with money. They got plenty of money and they can pay for things. Now, until we get some kind of a slowdown in jobs or maybe a reversal and inflation stays higher, which is technically like a stagflation environment, nobody's going to be too upset. But with the unemployment rate staying low, with the economic numbers being solid, with wage growth really moving higher, it pretty much cements in the fact that there'll be two rate hikes by the end of the year. One in September, one in December.
Yeah, I think so.
That's 50 basis points. That's now you're starting to get some real money going on here. Now, you know, we're off of the bottom significantly. And, you know, this really does have an impact on borrowing. This is why we're seeing a lot of the home builders sag. This is why existing home and new home and construction is all kind of rolling down, I believe. Not to mention that prices are moving up even higher. But I'm seeing here in my neck of the woods, first of all, overbuilding. There's cranes everywhere.
Yeah, we have a lot of overbuilding in the Bay Area.
Yeah. But prices had been just skyrocketing. Now houses staying on the market much longer, especially the very high end. I take my boat down the canal to get to the ocean. So I have to come down this canal with these beautiful homes, just absolutely beautiful. They've been these homes, you know, the $5 to $20 million price tag homes.
Right.
They have for sale signs in front for the last year. They're not moving.
Well, those are expensive houses.
They are, but if someone wants to live on the water in Fort Lauderdale and a beautiful, you know, intercoastal New River, that's the pricing. But
Which reminds me, how is that hurricane affecting you guys?
No. I mean, we may see a little bit of stormy weather or some, you know, not even outer bands. I'm just talking about some weather issues, but nothing different than normal in the summertime. But that thing's making a beeline right to North Carolina. And that, you know, when you see all of those spaghetti models lining up when it's so far away, that's nerve wracking.
Well, I think it's less nerve wracking than all the uncertainties of the models where it's going every which way.
Right. That's true.
I mean, you do know it's heading your way. It's like, here it comes.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the last hurricane, I guess it was last year, we had a hurricane come and it veered at the last second. So we only caught the tail of it. It was still ugly. But we strapped down the boat. You know, we had to kind of pull everything inside, took everything down from the tiki.
Yeah, everyone was expecting the tiki had to get blowed out to sea.
I did have to repair it a little bit, but it wasn't that bad. It was like $500 worth of repairs.
Yeah.
Kind of new top line. They come with the leaves and they push it down and put some like 2x4s or they're made out of these cypress tree wood. It's a real
Shouldn't
heavy.
Should it be made out of bamboo?
No. Cypress wood. Really thick wood. You know, just solid as can be. These are the cypress trees that you see all over Florida throughout the Everglades.
Okay.
That's why they call it Big Cypress Preserve out in the Everglades. Huh. But we did see 3.9% unemployment, right? And I thought we would go to Shadow Stats and see what's going on there. I did put the link in there for you.
Yes, because I like to go to this.
Save you a little time.
So you did actually look at it this time.
I did.
So it is turning down, but it's not turning down below 20%. It's kind of headed to 20%, which seems logical to me based on going outside.
If it shot up in 2008, right? So that's when it really ramped to 13% up to about 23%.
Yeah.
And now it's at 21%. It's at 21.2% right now. What in the world would make it come down lower than it is now?
Well, that's a good question. I can't answer. I don't know.
I mean, it'd have to be a lot more people working.
If it did come down somehow, I can't imagine what life would be like.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
The freeways are crowded. You can't get anywhere. The housing prices are up through the roof. People are... I just can't imagine. I don't think it's ever going to keep... Maybe it's going to stay where it is. I don't know. It's got to come down. I mean, it's been lower before.
8% unemployment. I mean, 8% of GDP. That's what we'd... 10% GDP was what we'd see. We'd have people working we'd have 13-year-olds working. Right? I mean, everybody would be working.
Yeah, you'd have to.
Yeah. We also saw the ISM non-manufacturing services sector and the manufacturing index do very well. The manufacturing, I told you last week, hit a high since, I think it was 2004. ISM non-manufacturing, which is the services sector, which is about 70% of the economy here in the U.S., also popped up. And there's a chart here to show you. So this is the blended 30-70 blend.
So yeah, it looks good.
It's kind of sitting in a good way. Now, Apple is coming out with some, possibly some new products tomorrow. But there's also some concern. Over the weekend, there was a concerning letter that was sent to President Trump about the concern that, well, Apple may get caught up finally in some of this whole trade tariff thing with China if the $200 billion is going to be implemented, not to mention the $267 billion, which is the final number to tally all of the imports from China that would be taxed. Mm. This is this last thing. So, we're going to put the 200, you know, maybe another 267 after that. Now, President Trump came back and said, well, you know, hey, he tweeted, he said, Apple should make products inside the United States if it wants to avoid tariffs on Chinese imports. He said, Apple prices may increase because of massive tariffs we may be imposing on China, but there's an easy solution, whether it be a zero tax and indeed a tax incentive. Make your products in the United States instead of China. Start building new plants now. How likely is that?
Well, Apple did say they were going to do some building in this country a year ago. And I don't know what they're doing about it. But it's kind of hard to beat the I'm sure they can't. I mean, they could build a robot plant and pretty much compete a little bit that way. But there's still the infrastructure, the cheap human labor, and everything else that go, and the cheap to get it over, get the project over here, and the engineering and design. A lot of that has to do with the Chinese. I mean, they're the ones who have to make these things fit together. It's not likely.
I mean, if in fact we do see a tariff on every single product that is brought in from China, clearly Apple's going to get caught up in the crosshairs. They have to. I mean, there's no question. You know, right now, I think they've tried to maneuver so that Apple products, realizing how important Apple is as a company in the United States, the largest company out there, right? I think they've tried to maneuver these tariffs around some key companies and key products. But again, if they go to this massive number, they're going to get dinged on the first one. I think with Beats, their AirPods, the HomePod, and there's one other product, maybe the watch. Those are the first ones that would get hit if, in fact, the $200 billion goes into play, which is possibly any day now.
I have no idea. Maybe that would trigger the bond collapse.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Something's going to trigger it. Apple now has 70 autonomous vehicles permitted to be tested in California roads. Have you seen, by the way, any autonomous? Have you been out there? I'm like, oh, there's one whizzing by right there.
No.
Yeah, so...
I did get a phone call from a friend of mine who was in one. I called him about something. I called him and then he told me he was in it. I said, can you? He says, yeah, I can take this call because I'm not driving. The car is driving itself.
Oh.
And he was off somewhere. I don't know what he was up to.
So the 70 autonomous vehicles that Apple has is a little bit less than Google's Waymo, which has 88, and GM has 175. I mean, yeah. are these in California, are these things allowed to be riding on roads where there's other non-autonomous vehicles?
I believe that they have a monitor inside.
Oh, so somebody's there with their hands near the steering wheel.
Yeah, I think so.
Just in case.
That's my understanding. I don't know that for a fact. I don't know if there's any that are just floating around by themselves, bumping around.
Yeah. I can't wait to send my car in for service or one of those things when they become autonomous. Click a button. Off you go. Or, I mean, what happens to like Uber in that circumstance? I mean, you just leave your car somewhere and just say, come pick me up. It's like, you know, whistling. You ever see those Westerns where they have the horses and you know. And the horse comes running at you, you know? So you just kind of whistle for your car and it comes.
Yeah.
Mm. That's going to be fun. Yeah,
we'll see how it goes because there's still issues with its ability to see certain things or to make mistakes.
But they'll get there.
Oh, yeah, eventually, but I don't think it's going to be tomorrow.
I mean, 5 years?
I would say 5 years is maybe wishful thinking.
All right, so 10 years. Let's go 10 years. Yeah, 10 years
for sure. I would say 10 years for sure.
I mean, that's going to be cool. I wonder, cars are going
to be... Well, I don't think it's going to be as cool as you think.
Well, what do you... I'm thinking we're going to have a little kitchenette in the back.
Yeah, no, you. I know what you're thinking, but I'm telling you it's going to bankrupt a lot of cities.
Due to the registrations?
Well, just registrations, parking, parking revenues.
Tickets.
Ticket revenues. San Francisco alone, I think, does $80 million in parking revenues.
So they just start charging a lot more for the cars.
Well, they have to charge a head tax on the cars.
Right.
That'll amount to the same amount. And it's going to be an awful lot of money, though.
Yeah. Well, right now in some, I think Singapore.
Also, property taxes. And there's going to be no need for parking lots. So those will all be torn down and they put up office buildings, which I guess might be a positive thing.
I mean, I think in Singapore or China, it's like $15,000 to register a license plate. I mean, that should cover it. It's been a while. Yeah,
but that'd go to the state. I don't think they'd be able to. Well, maybe they'd have city registrations. That might be the way they have to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, New York City does have personal income tax if you live in the town. And yeah, you have to
city,
pay up.
Yeah, city, state, county, all those. Yeah. Now, here's an interesting story that caught my eye, and it relates to something that you know about. And I saw this on Friday unfold as it happened, because I noticed a couple of the corner of my eye. I noticed a couple of stocks were just getting whacked. I don't usually keep these on my screen, but I saw something, and I'm like, "What's going on over there?" So I started looking at it. It seems that the SEC has a lawsuit or a suit against a group of investors that are accused of manipulating stocks through a complex plan of setting up several companies, pump and dumps, doing things like, you know, writing an article on Seeking Alpha, but before that, trying to push the stock up. So it looks like people knew it was going on, and this real great article comes out about whatever it is that they're doing. And then this other company buys it. They push the stock up. They create this squeeze. And, you know, stocks go up from $3 to $22 or $23. And then, you know, as everybody gets in, then they sell.
Then you bail.
You sell it out from under them. So one of the named parties in this is a gentleman named Phil Frost. Now, that may not be ringing a bell, but it will in a second.
No, it does ring a bell.
Oh, it will. It will. He's a billionaire who, for some time, has been buying this one stock that I was like, hey, what's going on with that? This is a stock pick that you had called Opka Pharmaceuticals.
Right.
He was buying it like every day, buying it. And he's a billionaire. There's a Frost museum name for him down here. He's pretty popular down here. He's a biotech 70-year-old billionaire dude, and he had some issue with, was it Teva maybe? I think it was Teva in Israel, and he made some money there. Anyway, when you looked at his holdings, all of a sudden, everything that was related to him that day was getting absolutely obliterated. I think that Opka Health is still halted. And you look at companies that he had holdings in, and I know, by the way, full disclosure, some of the people on this particular list of parties that are involved in this that were working with him on this, I happen to know. Let's just say that I always knew there was something not right with what they were doing. Okay?
Yeah.
And because this was all based in Florida, most of these guys. One of the companies that they had was Pershing Gold, which is your pick from last week.
Yeah. Why did I pick that?
Because Phil Frost was buying it. That's why.
Now that's the reason. Okay.
Okay. Comes full circle here. Needless to say, you were bumped. Opka Health, Riot.
So I got screwed on a pump and dump.
Yep. You maybe when the class action happens, you can somehow, you know.
Well, since it's in the game, I won't be able to benefit from the class action. But those things don't work out anyway.
Yeah. Opka Health, again, still halted. Riot Blockchain. There's a company called Cool. MGTI, which was a company that all the same parties were mentioned in this, plus they had companies that they created to make things look a certain way, like the, you know, company A would buy it and they would have no, and what they would do is, as the lawsuit, I read, there's like about 40 pages, they would buy and sell without disclosing, even though they were, owners that required to have disclosure. And they would then do it within other companies, and they'd do it with other people, and they would do all the stuff. So it didn't look like they were doing it. So they're getting in big trouble. About $9 million worth of initial profits have to be disgorged.
Wow.
That's at least if they win the suit, I guess, you know, if the SEC wins. Plus, they'll be banned for life for this or that. But there was a list of about, I would say, I looked up Phil Frost. I went to the Insider Trading Report, and I found out the companies that he has an affiliation with or any kind of, you know, he's on the board with. And there's about, I would say, about a dozen companies. They were all getting smoked on Friday.
Wow.
Yeah. All of them. Speaking about companies and having lawsuits, there's Andrew Left, who is the founder of Citron Research, who is a well-known short seller, is suing Tesla and Chairman Elon Musk.
Yeah, this is a good story.
For inflating the company's stock price. And in the lawsuit, Left seeks to represent a class of investors who traded Tesla shares from August 7th through August 17th. And the suit says that Musk's longstanding public feud with short sellers, claiming he manipulated the price of Tesla securities to hurt such investors, and in doing so, damaged all buyers of the company's shares by issuing false and misleading information. Then there was a downgrade today by Tesla of Tesla. Nomura Securities, this guy Romit Shah, who was a longtime bull, longtime advocate of Tesla, he downgraded the company to neutral from a buy in a note titled "No Longer Investable."
Hmm.
And this note claims...
What does that mean, no longer investable?
Well, and I actually saw his interview today on TV. The note he sent to clients, he starts by pointing out that previously he's been one of the biggest bulls on the street that, you know, since he initiated coverage last October, he had a big price target on it. He slashed his target from 400 to 300, and he's citing the erratic behavior of Elon Musk. Among his concerns were the increasing number of Musk tweets per day. I think they went from like, I don't know, like 5 to 15 per day over the last few months. His cave diver accusations, you know about that story, right?
Oh, yeah. Dumb.
His outbursts on earnings calls. Remember that one where he told people, hey, that's a boring question, next, and hung up on two different analysts? Not this one, but the last one prior.
Yeah, it was a couple ago. Yeah.
And his taunts of short sellers and his appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast where he was drinking, smoking cigars, and then taking smoking pot.
Yeah, smoking a little pot there.
Who does that?
I think he's trying to get himself extricated. This is like an escape strategy.
I don't know.
He knows the writing's on the wall. The company's not going to make it. He doesn't want to be blamed for it. He's trying to get himself kicked out of the company. How's that for a theory?
If it ever happens, you look back on everything that happened, you say, well, yeah, that's what happened. I mean, that's perfectly aligned. But seriously, I mean, everybody's like, whoa, what's the big deal if he's smoking some pot? First of all, did you see him smoking pot on the video?
Yeah.
He looked like an idiot. He didn't even inhale, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. He just took like a drag.
So what's the point? What's the point? Why would somebody take a joint or some kind of blunt or whatever that he was doing, put it in his mouth and take a puff of it without inhaling? What is the purpose?
Yeah, like you would a cigar.
Yeah, what's the purpose? I mean, was it to look cool? To look like
he's
hip?
I would have to assume so, or maybe it was just to get him kicked out of the company. Again, I'll go back to my thesis.
Yeah, well, he's doing a good job because there's a lot of calling for his ouster. He's definitely over the edge. It could be, you know what? It could be as simple as a lack of sleep. We know that he's not sleeping. We know the body needs a certain amount of sleep. Each person is different, but the body needs a certain amount of sleep or else you can go crazy. I mean, if you have sleep deprivation for like, what is it? Like 2 weeks, you can go bonkers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he's gone bonkers.
Maybe. It's just not normal. Even if you saw the CEO of a marijuana company smoking a joint on the Joe Rogan show, wouldn't you? Not really appropriate.
I think you're right. I don't think shooting up heroin would be appropriate either. That would really get you kicked out.
But then again, sipping on a whiskey is okay. Maybe my moral compass is a little screwed.
Well, sipping on a whiskey probably on the Joe Rogan show may or may not be okay. Mm. Depends on what time the show is produced. If it's 10 in the morning, I'd be skeptical.
Mm. Well, bottom line is that there's something awry, something amiss.
Yeah.
Something's well, just I'm not so with right.
My theory, and that's where it ends.
All right. Well, we'll start this little mini segment with, you know, things are bad when.
Another gimmick for the show.
Well, we could actually expand this. This is a small one. I just thought of it just now. But you know when things are bad. You know when things are bad when China's securities regulator last week released draft revisions of company rules that said it was aimed at simplifying share buyback procedures for listed securities. In a statement on its website, the China's regulatory commission said that the draft rules would broaden the circumstances in which companies are able to buy back shares. So now that we know that China's in a bear market, down about 22% since the beginning of the year or so, and all of a sudden they're trying their best to revive this. How are they doing it? Well, let the companies buy their own shares back.
Yes, that would do it.
Mm-hmm. We could probably continue with, you know, when things are bad when.
Well, actually, why don't we open it up to our listeners and make it one of our little games.
I need to write this down. I need to come up, you know, I gotta come up with some kind of graphic or something. You know things are bad when, you know, it has to be related to stories, right? Recent stories.
It has to be related to the stock market.
Yep. You know things are bad when. Okay. You know things. Okay. Next story. I don't know if we talked about this last week. I just don't recall. But I thought if we didn't, probably good for this Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, High Holy Day, High Holy Week time period. Shares of Snap have been under pressure after Snapchat was caught up in a public backlash when an act of vandalism temporarily relabeled the New York City as Jutropolis on several popular apps and services. Did you see this? Did we talk about this at all?
No. It's the first I've heard of it.
So you know how the Snap, which you call making a dog face on, you can overlay a variety of things, and you can overlay your location, for example, geotagging. And the geotag for New York was Jutropolis. And it was also the same on whatever particular mapping service they used. If you looked on the map of that, you know, if any company used them as a mapping service, and let's say they had a map and you kind of zeroed in on New York, it would say Jutropolis. Now, I don't know why they went that route instead of just saying New York City. That would seem to be a little easier and probably, you know, but.
Mark, you could say, well, it's just a typo because the J and the N on a keyboard are right next to each other. Oh. So you could make that mistake.
Oh, I see. Jutropolis. Snap was down below $10 yesterday.
I don't know if it's worth 50 cents. It's one of the 50 cent stocks as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Here's a weird number here. 20%. I find I'm giving you this number up front because I want that number to resonate. A survey conducted by Douglas Elliman, which is a real estate company, found that about 20% of all retail space in Manhattan is currently vacant, compared with roughly 7% in 2016. Doesn't that seem high?
Yes, it does.
20%.
And disconcerting, if true. Now, there's been a lot of things closed around here, too. But it's not as though it's like because the economy's down. It's because all these landlords have jacked up the prices and driven out people that are, you know, normally would be still be there if they were allowed to be there. And they've just shut, closed down because they said, "Nuts, I can't stay in this. I'm not going to do it."
But how do you reconcile raising the rent as opposed to, okay, I'll just leave it vacant until somebody possibly takes a long-term lease and lock them in. I'm willing to take, you know, however long it's going to take to get this thing rented out. I mean, it seems.
It's beyond me. I probably agree with your thinking. It doesn't make any sense. You got a bird in the hand, which is the guy who's renting at a reasonable price, and you're jacking up the price to drive him out so he can get somebody else to come in, and they never come in. How's this working out?
I mean, the bottom line is that there's supposed to be a basic tenet of supply and demand. Whereas if someone's not renting, aside from the fact that maybe there's no businesses that could rent, but that's not the case, that what would happen is, well, it is possible. Well, hold on. It is possible that some of the retail establishments no longer are in business anymore because they've been ousted by online types of businesses. So the mom and pop stationery store, or, you know, other small, the hardware store. Those things have been, of course, you know, put aside due to the fact that you have the Home Depots, the Amazons, and other, you know, the other major, you know, Walmarts of the world.
Yeah. I have a mom and pop store, stationery store up the street from me that's still in business. How, and I actually go there.
How is that?
Fine with me. I mean, stuff I buy, there's always offbeats, like different kinds of envelopes or those rolls for an adding machine.
Who uses an adding machine?
I do.
Really?
Well, if you're tallying up a bunch of checks, you want to use an adding machine with a paper tape so you can check your work so you don't keep giving the bank wrong numbers. Seems to me it'd be a good idea. It's not unusual.
Well, you obviously get a lot more checks than I get. I usually get all my stuff in direct deposit, but I use Excel.
Just saying. Oh, well, see, that sounds like a pain in the ass.
What do you mean? Push a button and I got a keyboard right there. Bing, 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 bing. What are you talking about?
Yeah, just saying. It sounds like a pain in the ass.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Good adding machines, yeah. And the great thing about an adding machine, you can get them for nothing at the Goodwill.
Is your adding machine require you to pull that handle after everything? Is that one of those?
Boy, I wish.
My grandfather had one of those. I love just punch and punch and punch and pull. Punch and punch and punch and pull.
Wow.
Those are the old days. Those are good old days. But maybe what I was saying is that the usual sequence is that if rents are too high, what they do is they adjust. They just, right? They just.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, we're getting some information from Dame Tanya about, she's thinking that there's some weird break in New York City that may keep places, that helps to keep, I guess, maybe offset some of the, offset the cost. Something going on there.
She's going to have to explain it.
Yeah. If it's a tax break or is it a, something going on. Follow up also before we get to our winner of the close to the pin. You know,
yes.
Nike had that ad that came out last week with Colin Kaepernick, and
just do it.
Everybody was burning their shoes, and people were hysterical, and all this weird crap was going on. Right?
Yes.
I found it very confusing, to be honest with you. I didn't understand anything that was going on. I understand the outrage of certain people who, you know, do not believe that kneeling during the national anthem is allowable. I get that. But what was really funny about this was that a week afterwards, so a whole week after this new Just Do It campaign, the new celebration of the 30th anniversary of Just Do It, Nike sales were up more than 20% for the week following this.
I'm kind of not surprised.
So is it that people burnt their shoes and decided, oh, crap, what did I just do? Or is
it could be that element. The other way. Yes, that's it.
But what were they doing?
What a dumb idea.
What do you think went on there? I mean, was it just the other side of the equation said, oh, good for you. We're behind you here. We're buying the shoes.
I think that's a large part of it. Freedom of speech. I don't know. I mean, you know, who knows? But I thought it was a success.
I'm not all in favor of kneeling during the national anthem. I have no problem with a peaceful protest and sometime during the game. I'm just a little bit weirded out about the fact that it is so, I guess on one hand, it's good that it is so divisive in that it's recognized and people understand what it is. And therefore, if you protested some other time, maybe you wouldn't get the same ability to, it wouldn't be as loud and as pronounced, right? So on the other hand, it is the flag and it is kind of, you know, you're not supposed to like burn the flag. You're not supposed to disrespect the flag and all that. So I don't know. It's kind of, I still haven't really made my mind up on this. Have you?
I don't intend to.
Oh.
I think
the whole, that's safe.
Yeah, I'm very safe. I don't think it's you know, it's a, I'm not gonna, I don't care, to be honest about it. I think the football and sports in general is over militarized. I don't know why they're playing the national anthem in the first place. It's got nothing to do with the government. It's a private organization putting on a sports exhibition.
That's a good point.
I don't know what the point of the national anthem is in during these things.
Should they do a Pledge of Allegiance? I mean, I go to these like chamber.
Why would I want to do the Pledge of Allegiance at a football game?
Well, what? I don't know. I go to these events like the Chamber of Commerce events. And they do a Pledge of Allegiance before breakfast, and I'm always a little. It's just strange to me.
I'm not a fan of that sort of thing.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's, I don't have any problem with kids doing the Pledge of Allegiance when they're in the grammar school. And then after that, you know, and it's kind of interesting. After that, unless it's a military exhibition of some sort, I don't get why we have to militarize a baseball game. I'm going to watch a couple of teams hit a ball around, catch a ball, and then all of a sudden I got to stand up for the national anthem because it's like part of the part of the government. I don't know that it is.
That's a good point. Dane Tanya makes a good point. The whole thing, it doesn't have anything to do with the flag. I agree with that. So if I did, if I mentioned it had something to do with the flag, I meant during the time about the flag, and some people are making it about the flag, and it's about the time during the national anthem when they do it and all this other stuff. But all I'm saying is I would tend to agree with you that I can be a unconscious objector, not objector, kind of a sideline on this. Because I think it's troubling that there's so much controversy about this. No matter what I say, I feel like I'm wrong with what I'm saying, by the way. You know what I mean? With this, I feel like no matter what I'm going to say, I'm wrong. So I'm moving on.
I've never felt that way about my position.
Well, maybe that's why I can't make a position on this. But I do agree with the... I do agree with both sides halfway, I guess, is my point. It's just the timing of it that's the problem, I guess.
Sells a lot of shoes.
Yeah, that's good.
Then, like, taking advantage of the situation. Good work, Nike.
Right, right. we do have a list of pot stocks. They're still lighting up, smoking it up. They're doing very well. And you can see that list that we have. You can click that. It's on the DH Unplugged episode number 423. Show notes where it
holy
says
crap.
Click what? You see those? You looking at those?
Tilray. Holy moly.
Tilray went berserk today again. And this, remember something. This list. Wait. Let's remember something about this list. This list is from 8/28. The change from 8/28, which is like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Lots of action.
Tilray up 86%.
Yeah. Wow. And Hexo is up 54% in two weeks.
Something was up like 100% today on here somewhere. Or some big number. Yeah, pretty crazy. Cool stuff. The pot stocks. I'll mention, by the way, if let's say you took our idea. Let's say you said, I didn't realize about those pot stocks a few weeks ago. And you bought some of them. Or maybe you like what we're talking about. You like my undecided view of the whole national anthem kneeling thing. Or you don't. Or you get some interesting ideas. If you learned about pomegranates tonight, you can do us a favor and give us a donation.
Even I learned something tonight.
Yeah. See, there you go. You can donate. And please do so. Go over to DH Unplugged. Click the donate button. And, of course, this is episode number 423. So if you desire to have perfect time for coming out of the summer, and we're getting into fall, a wonderful item to be wearing is the DH Unplugged t-shirt. $423 for this show. Each show, it goes up a dollar. So if you want to get in before inflation hits this strong, just go over to DH Unplugged, click on the button, say, hey, I want a shirt, and put in the $423 as the donation, $423. And then we will tell us your size and your address, and we'll ship it right off with our autograph signatures and comments on the shirt.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. Anything else you'd like to add?
It'll be in a very pretty envelope when you get it.
Yep. Let's see here. Now, I still have a bone to pick with you with your emails. You're just not. I don't know what I'm gonna have to do. I'm gonna have to put some real very bold points in my subjects for you to read my emails from now on.
Why? What did I miss this time?
You didn't put your price guess in for closest to the pin for Canopy
Growth.
Oh, yeah,
I know. That was my fault. I was remiss. But that doesn't mean you have to give a price guess of zero.
Well, what do you want me to give? What do you want me to say?
You just humiliate me. I was off 100%. Of course I was.
Well, Canopy Growth was the closest to the pin, and this was a pretty wild one. But Joshua D., came in as the winner. He was 26 cents off from the price, ending at 51.53. He guessed 51.27.
Nice call.
Beautiful. The average price per entry, just to show you how off the mass was $43.27. So talking about $7 off.
Yeah.
John A. came up as the runner-up, off by 2.25%. I was off by 5.88%. I had 48.50. And it was 51.53.
Thing was definitely on a roll.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to. Josh D is actually in Canada, and shipping to Canada is a very costly process. And we got to figure out.
Some way of doing it.
I sent a note.
I think UPS or FedEx has better deals than the post office. I could be wrong. Federal Express is too expensive for everything. Forget I even mentioned their name.
You just got charged $10 for mentioning their name. That's how expensive they are.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Completely out of control.
I have a bill right here from FedEx. Let's see. You want me to open this up?
Hang on. Yeah.
I get them like every time you ship something. I'm opening it up right now. Here's my latest FedEx. I don't do a lot of FedExing because I don't want to pay it. Here's my FedEx bill. Let's see. I shipped something. Let's see what it was. Oh, my God. What did I ship? I have, let's see, FedEx Ground prepaid. That was one for $25.
FedEx Ground? It should be $5 at the most.
It was a 14-pound package from here to Taylorsville, Utah. That was a return of something. Then I had, let's see, this was a 2-pound something or other. To Manassas, Virginia. That cost me $11. Oh, I didn't even see this one. Oh, this is interesting. He has a home delivery one. I sent something to somewhere in Florida. That was $17. That was a letter.
The letter was so expensive.
It was an actual weight was 1.8 pounds, whatever the hell I sent there. It was like some documents and stuff. And the rated weight, whatever the hell that is, was 4 pounds. So they round up by 2 pounds?
I have no idea. You're talking to the wrong guy. I gave up on these guys a while back.
$54 for 3 packages.
Yeah.
Sheesh. Sheesh. Put that aside for a while. Onward. And this is why we need, by the way, just to send things and send the shirts and send the various things that we send out. That's why we need your donations. Very important. A Chinese restaurant operator is in hot water. You'll see what that's funny about. After local media reported that a customer discovered a dead rat in a meal. Shares of...
A rat?
Yeah. I find this hard to believe, by the way, because...
I find it hard to believe, too. You don't get stir-frying the rat and nobody notices?
Well, this was a restaurant called Shabu Shabu, which Shabu Shabu is a type of meal where you have a hot pot of water in Japan. It's called Shabu Shabu. In China, they call it hot pot. Okay? Here, they call it like... what do you call that when you put the chocolate in the fondue? Right?
Yeah.
So... Shabu Shabu Catering Management China Holdings Company tumbled as much as 11% in Hong Kong on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. This is a scam.
Yeah. Extending Monday's 6.1% decline, authorities of this Wangfang city in East China's Shandong province are conducting food safety tests at one of their restaurants. Local website wafang.sestenews.com reported that after the market closed, a customer found the rat in a hot pot meal on September 6th. Now, let me tell you a couple of things about the hot pot meal. In a traditional hot pot meal, you get a pot of water or whatever it is in front of you, okay? And you put all your own stuff in there. So basically, the way they do it is they have a cart that comes around most of the time with pitchers of different flavored broth. You could have, sometimes you have a community broth on the table. Sometimes it'll be split in two. So you have two broths on each, broth on each side. Sometimes you have your own individual bowl with a hot plate underneath it. And they pour the broth in there. Then you take your meats and your vegetables and all the different stuff, your noodles, and you put it in your own hot pot or in the community bowl, right? Got me so far?
Yeah.
Where the hell did the rat get in there?
Maybe they had a magician at the table.
Something's not right about this article.
It doesn't sound right. I don't know how the rat could get in. I mean, when they pour in the broth in a floop, the rat falls in. I mean, nobody notices.
Yeah, and they pour it out of like a tall, almost like a, what I've seen is a tall, I mean, sometimes they come to the table with the pot of stuff. That means somebody would have had to scooped it out and not noticed that the rat was hanging over the ladle as they poured into, the whole thing is really weird. Really weird.
Seems unlikely.
Yep. We have time just for a couple more things, and I'll postpone some of these stories till next. But one of the ones that I did want to talk about.
Two weeks from now. We're not going to do a show next week.
A store in Kuwait has reportedly been shut down after it was discovered that its owners were sticking googly eyes on fish in an attempt to make them appear fresher. And you have to see this picture. Do you see this picture?
No, let me look.
Those little plastic googly eyes, you know what I'm saying? For that you put on like dolls. They stuck them on the fish.
Oh, jeez. That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, people got home and they're like, what happened with the eyes? They just fell out. People put them in a broth and they're eating.
And then there's a rat.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get to the stocks, what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine this week?
I am writing about... I do know what it is because it's about the new Article 11 and Article 13 that everyone's all bent out of shape about, that the EU is proposing to add to their copyright laws. And this is going to perhaps create a link tax, or it's going to require small sites to check for copyrights on everything. And I just found the whole thing to be a crock. And I discuss why this is, it seemed to me the whole, this whole thing, and everyone's all bent out of shape about it. And they got to, you got to write, even though it's really not American, it's about the EU, but you got to write your MEPs and tell them to, which have no power, and tell them to put a stop to this. This is to me, and I explain in there, and I think people would have to agree with this. This is just more of the EU looking at Google and Microsoft and Apple and Facebook and Twitter and saying to themselves, why can't we do any of these things?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're pissed. So if we can't beat them,
do any of these things, we're incompetent. So let's gouge them. Let's make their lives miserable. Let's steal money from them. And that's what I think is really all about.
Well, does this mean that I'm going to get another barrage of emails about updates of EULAs, updates of terms of service, updates of privacy probably. And all that. I mean, it's still trickling in.
It's a nightmare. Anyway, it's a pretty good column. I would recommend people look at it. Probably out tomorrow, the next day, probably Thursday.
All right, we got a link over on show notes again of episode number 423. All right, let's get to the stocks. It's a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. It's nothing more than some ideas that we come up with each and every week to think about, hey, what could be interesting. John and I go head to head on this. We talk about, well, what's our thesis? If there's any disclosures, if Horowitz Company, John C. Dvorak, or myself own any of these stocks. And of course, if you decide for whatever reason to follow along on any of these, do us a favor, go and seek professional financial advice. Investing in stocks is risky. You could lose a lot of money, and we are not responsible for any of it.
I would agree with that.
Only the gains. It's all us. All us if there's gains.
Yep.
All of our wisdom. So Take a
we're still mostly in the green. We got some crap that a couple of things kind of sold down a little bit. My scam, the Pershing Gold Company, went from $1.32 to $1.12.
Yep.
It never did take off. Not much of a pump and dump. If it was a pump and dump, it would have gone to 10 and then crashed, but no. So that's no good. And I don't have anything for this week.
Well, I'd like to hold out my back for you to pat on the Generac Holdings position.
That was, yes.
See, look at that thesis. What's that thesis?
Yep, that was the hurricane season. You had Generac Holdings, which was it wasn't doing great, but now it's up 19% because it was just a great idea. It was this was a smart investment idea.
This is what we call a seasonal trade. Now it's hurricane.
You gonna dump it now?
I can't dump it here.
The game has to dump it for you.
We hold it for clients as well. But this was back in like right in the beginning of June that this idea we actually did the same thing last year. Right in about the beginning of June, right before hurricane season, before everybody gets the wind of the idea, generators, of course. And if there is a terrible hurricane season, look what happens to the price of these things.
Yeah, they go up. So they sell a lot more.
Yep. So also, yeah, Pershing Gold is off. Otherwise, MJ, the ETF, which is, it's not the correct, I should probably put that description different there. That's the marijuana ETF is up 11.8%. Walgreens up 4.6. Morningstar keeps on just floating gently higher, 11.5%. I have one. I'm going to take a flyer here on a parabolic.
I think this is a good pick.
I've been wondering what is the, what is the whole, I see that obviously there's new management there that they're doing better on their, what is it, their 11 nanometer? They got a 14, well, whatever.
14.
The 14 nanometer. They're coming out with an 11 or a 10. And they're taking over some of the server business. They have a competition on the graphics cards, NVIDIA. So everybody's like all, I think there's a lot of short position on this AMD also.
Jacked up.
Yep. Closed in at about $30. One of the best stocks this year. So I'm going
so
short.
You're shorting it.
AMD. Yeah. Yep, going short.
I think this is a good idea. AMD very rarely gets to this level, and they tend to be a $3 stock. I think this is a great pick.
Thank you. Well, with that, we're going to end it, and I wish you, let me give you what you say on Rosh Hashanah, okay? Lishana tova tikatevu, may be inscribed in the book of life.
Ditto.
Yeah, thank you. All right, I will see you 2 weeks from now.
All right. See you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.